This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor, happily with my colleague and friend Gregory Copley. His new book, The Noble State, Governance Options in an Ignoble Era. The story so far, 250 years ago, it's a round number, there was a trend in the world, and it was talked about admiringly and curiously from Europe. A republic, if you can keep it. That's a quote from Ben Franklin. I've always been taught that that was a high point. I'm beginning to wonder. Gregory, you observe at that point the United States had a constitution, and then it had the Peace of Paris in 1783, and there was a need to transform the state from a confederation into a federal republic. That underwent a lot of debate, was passed eventually, and George Washington becomes the first president. However, what happened then is that the country grew, and you observe that the Constitution, because it would become so difficult to change it, froze the republic. That was not a problem through the 19th century because we were growing very quickly in the United States. It's become a problem now. Do I read you correctly?
Yes, up to a point. I think the Constitution is still the thing which holds the United States together. And the Constitution of the United States was written in such a way, even with the amendments, that it, in fact, is the de facto crown of the United States. It's above politics. There's been a constant attempt to politicize and interpret the Constitution politically, and that's been to the detriment of the society in the long run, I believe, because it's a very short-term approach. But the Constitution needs a degree of permanence to it, but it, as you say, it needs this ability to upgrade itself, reinterpret itself, add the amendments and the like. And yes, it has become difficult or almost impossible for it now to be added to or changed in any meaningful way. So that becomes somewhat of a problem. And now, of course, it imposes greater responsibility on the Supreme Court and the legislature to be able to interpret the Constitution in ways which allow it some flexibility, but also maintain, if you like, the integrity and purpose of the country. And what we see, but because we're at this state which Bob Pasha called the average lifespan of an empire, we're now seeing that the society itself is becoming divided, including divided as to whether the Constitution is valid. We see a lot of the modern Republican people, I'm not talking about Republican Party, I'm talking about people who advocate a republic, whether they're in Australia or in the United States or Britain, Canada, whatever, they believe that the Constitution is an impediment to democracy because they interpret democracy in the same way that most republics do, as short-term and transactional. There's no respect paid to, if you like, long-term durable values, because they don't necessarily believe that values are durable and long-term. They believe that whatever people decide at any given moment is democracy, and anything else is an affront to democracy. The reality is that in any aspect of life, you need rules, and constitutions apply those rules. They say, okay, we're going to play in the game of nation states. We have to define what we mean by a nation state and define our purpose as citizens of that nation state. And that's what constitutions do. But we're now seeing this move to disregard constitutions when populists think that the will of the people override the eternal or quasi-eternal values of a constitution. So at some point, you get a breakdown in the whole society in a republic, because sooner or later people say, well, I don't want to abide by that constitution anymore. We want to change things. We want to redefine the nature of human life, in fact. And so at that point, you get either a revolution or a restructuring of the society. We saw it in Rome. It moved from basically republic to empire. They wouldn't use the word kingdom because that had a bad connotation in the Republic, as it does today in the United States. So they went straight to a classical empire, which, for better or worse, but in fact, the greatest periods of the Roman civilization were during the empire. And it gave it a new life. We saw Britain undergo a brief fling at republicanism with the revolutions under Cromwell and the like. But then they reinvigorated, if you like, Britain, and Britain certainly became from that point onwards the great empire that took it through to the 20th century.
Let's speak well of monarchy, because we can identify what's going wrong with democracy by just reading the newspaper headlines. Monarchy is best when there's a faith-based electorate. Do we have such a thing?
Well, yes, because although we see the modern trend is to disavow traditional or classical faiths, Christian, Jewish, Muslim, whatever, or even Buddhism, we see that people don't, as one great author said years ago, when people stop believing in God, they don't believe in nothing, they'll believe in anything. And so this is the value, if you like, of organized belief systems. So we see this constant attempt to recreate belief systems, whether it's climate change, and you latch onto some real elements of a society and you turn that into a belief system. And the belief system is such that that with all of these belief systems, whether it's Judeo-Christian religions or whatever, you are encouraged not to inquire into the logic or the factual foundations of certain aspects of the religion. You are told you just must believe, because belief is where you get, if you like, unity within societies, if you all believe the same values, the same things. So what we're in now is in this transition period where we see a lot of classical religions being questioned, is not a durable replacement in sight. And that leaves us for a great period of turmoil. What we are seeing in things like the restoration of the British monarchy is that King Charles has revived people's belief, if you like, in belief in beliefs, in classical beliefs. And he's done that not by overstressing his role as head of the Anglican Church, but as a faith leader who is very supportive of all the faiths in British society, British and Commonwealth society. Just recently, for example, he was able to bring Jewish and Muslim leaders together in Britain to agree, and they did agree wholeheartedly, on the way the Middle East situation needed to be addressed, particularly between Israel and the Palestinians. So this was incredibly important for that reason, that it's the belief in beliefs which is as important as the individual religion itself. But religion, classical religion particularly, or it could be animism for that matter, does rely heavily on mysticism, and so does nobility. You need to imbue your chosen leader with that sense of nobility, and to the point where even the choice of the leader is not in your hands. And this is the advantage of hereditary monarchies, is that they are handed to you generation after generation. You have that continuity, and the role of the monarch is to agree to be the repository of the nobility and the mysticism of society. And you look at all the great, if you like, British nationalistic music, it's all imbued with mysticism, such as the great British hymn Jerusalem. And it's all about the mysticism of the land, of the leader, of eternity, in a sense. So, yes, religion is critical, or the belief in beliefs. And As an Anglican, I can say it myself, it's one of the great benefits of the Anglican sect of Christianity is that it's more about the belief in the system as much as it is, well, say as much about the belief in the system as it is about the belief in the traditional Christian teachings, so that you essentially are happy with this great earthly representation, if you like, of an ideal society with an ideal representative leading and showing example. And this is why these stupid minor people in the British monarchy, and Swedish monarchy for that matter, have been running off doing crazy things. We saw that with the Thai monarchy for a while as well. But you need to say, well, the king or the queen is not necessarily viewed as a human being, but we understand that there is a human aspect to them. But you get in the British crown people like Prince Andrew and Prince Harry going off doing crazy things. They do not represent the king, and the essential thing for the society is to get angry with those malefactors and push them away from the monarchy so they shouldn't be part of it.
You've given us the example of Charles the Positive. When we come back, the mandate of heaven. Is that capable of transforming the Chinese Communist Party into an empire? And in Moscow, is that on its way to becoming an empire again? With perhaps not the Tsar, but an emperor. The book is The Noble State by Gerger Copley.
Stay tuned for more of CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.